Last month, Azerbaijan applied to join BRICS. Armenia, meanwhile, has confirmed it will attend the organization's summit in Russia next month. This week, we ask why BRICS has been making inroads in the South Caucasus and what it could mean for Armenia and Azerbaijan's future foreign policy trajectories. I'm Robin Fabro, and you're listening to the Caucasus Digest. Named after its founding members, Brazil, Russia, India, and China, and later South Africa, BRICS is now expanding further. The organization positions itself as providing an alternative to a Western-led world order, promoting a multipolar system. Azerbaijan has long tried to juggle its relations with the West and the rest of the world. And just a day after Russian President Vladimir Putin visited Baku in late August, the country announced it had applied to join BRICS. Shujat Ahmadzadeh is an independent researcher from Baku. He joins us now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Shujat, let's start with Azerbaijan's application for BRICS membership. How significant is that?
Well, in terms of, let's say, the endpoint, I think we are still uncertain about whether this membership could happen, because BRICS membership eventually requires consensus approval from all members. And in Azerbaijan's case, the biggest obstacle seems to be India. Because of the long history of Azerbaijani-Indian relations being somehow tied up with Azerbaijani-Pakistani relationship, which in itself resulted in Indian veto or boycott of some Azerbaijani, let's say, multilateral diplomatic actions over the past decade. Which could be the case with the BRICS as well, because as far as I remember, when the whole hints towards the BRICS membership began, there was a narrative coming that India is unhappy with Azerbaijan's potential membership, which is in fact kind of problem with many other applicants, to be honest. BRICS has many applicants, and not all of them are becoming members. So from my perspective, here, membership is not the goal, even though it is desired outcome. But I think that it is not about a membership, but rather about the pattern, the larger patterns that shape Azerbaijan's modern foreign policy making after especially the Second Karabakh War, but more precisely after the Ukraine War began in 2022. This pattern, of course, complements what has already been there. To be more specific, Azerbaijan's constant shift between non-alignment on the one hand, as in it refused to join alliances, blocs that require integration. On the other hand, multi-alignment, meaning that Azerbaijan is trying to be present everywhere, every time. This is something that is happening at least since 2010, 2011, as first Azerbaijan became member of the non-aligned movement and then later increased its efforts to, let's say, to cement its role in this institution, non-aligned movement. Now, after the Ukraine war began, I think this efforts of just giving a new identity to Azerbaijan's foreign policy making occurred, in the sense that now we are seeing more patterns of Azerbaijani distancing, not as in it is kind of isolating itself, or rather it is more of like it is trying to be friends with everyone, present everywhere. And here the pattern is pretty much similar to what's happening in Turkey, as we also heard. Turkey is also planning to apply. Yeah, this is kind of larger pattern, also in line with the bigger international relations system, as in we have the retreat, or that's the crisis of international neoliberal economic order, political order, which faces a lot of crises across the globally. In parallel to that, we have the so-called the rise of the rest, meaning that now the many international relations scholars and analysts believe that it is the era of multiple local, regional, mini alliances, tactical alliances are to be built. I think this is what dominates Azerbaijan foreign policy. It is refusal to join camps that require, let's say, either us or them choice and integration, which includes Eurasian Economic Union and essentially European Union as well. But Azerbaijan is more than happy to be present in different kind of platforms where integration, where requirements, where the requirements are not that much. And BRICS is one of them.
You mentioned there India, that India might have an issue with Azerbaijan joining. And I wonder, what do you think about the major players in BRICS? How would they feel towards Azerbaijan approaching them?
I think, well, it is not how I think, but rather it is what has been told to the public, that China and Russia are supportive of Azerbaijan's bid to get a BRICS membership. In case of China, I think, again, this pattern overall rather strengthens Chinese vision of modern international order, in which you have not one big camp, but rather a lot of camps, in which some countries are willing to, let's say, increase their cooperation with China. In the past few years, we have seen increases by China-Chinese relations, these interactions. Most recently, there was a deal signed between Azerbaijan and China, which was a strategic partnership agreement, which elevated the status of diplomatic relations one step higher. So you have a Chinese backing here. You have a Russian backing, which is again puts Azerbaijan in the same, let's say, tactically position with Moscow and Beijing in terms of how they see the collapse, not collapse, rather crisis of the existing hegemonic order, which is the new liberal economic or political order of the post-Cold War era. In that perspective, of course, China and Russia have bigger says, and in countries like Azerbaijan, there is actually very little say in its in the future of this order making. But I would say Azerbaijan is, as a small country in international relations, trying to make sure that this BRICS path is somehow being helpful in keeping Baku-Beijing and Baku-Moscow relations friendly and warm, essentially.
You mentioned China there. What do you think this could say about China's role in the region and how that may be expanding?
Well, the Caucasus, South Caucasus, is not a priority region for China, that is for sure. Even though you have a history of Chinese economic and trade presence coming here, you have more in Georgia, to some degree in Armenia, and Azerbaijan to a little degree, largely because I think there is some kind of friendly avoidance, quote-unquote, in Azerbaijan, and not letting mass Chinese investments to come to the country, largely because of its potential, let's say, political implications, as we have seen in the case of Pakistan, in the case of Djibouti, in the case of, let's say, Malaysia, Zimbabwe, where Chinese loans and investments, and even in the case of Central Asian countries, Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan, to be more precise, where we have Chinese massive investments and that's economic political tools, which are part of the One Belt, One Road initiative, led these countries to face some, let's say, challenges in their foreign policy making and increase the China's leverage over their decision making. So I think from that perspective, there's a kind of friendly avoidance, let's say, aura in Baku. I mean, we have seen very rare examples of massive Chinese presence in Azerbaijan. We have more in Georgia, obviously, in the port and railway system, in the connectivity part of the economy. But it is not, let's say, gigantic if you compare it to, let's say, Southeast Asia and other parts of the world, largely because of the vision in Beijing. Because as of now, I mean, as of not now per se, but for more than a decade, Chinese top number one economic political goal is to make sure that international trade system is rather redesigned in a way that it helps to maintain Chinese upper hand. Most of international trade happens through the maritime routes. And that is like 90% of the European Chinese trade goes through the maritime routes. Only and a fraction of this happens through the railways and other means of transport. And here you really have very little value of making the South Caucasus as your number one, kind of numero uno primary, let's say, target area. So from that perspective, I think South Caucasus seen more of like somewhere there that is good to be present from the Chinese perspective, but not an area that requires over Chinese involvement, as in you see in the case of Southeast Asia, in the Horn of Africa, in the South of Africa, and even in Balkans and Eastern Europe.
So this announcement that Azerbaijan was intended to apply to join BRICS, it came soon after a visit by President Vladimir Putin to Baku. And I wonder, do you think that's a coincidence?
Well, I think that was a part of the discussions, as in Russia said that openly that we support this membership. And I think that was part of the discussions, but I'm not sure if Russia is the key motivator here. I would rather say Azerbaijan is kind of accelerating its a decade-long permanent shift between the multi-alignment and non-alignment. And BRICS has now become a bit of a buzzword. As you know, after 2022 Ukraine war, a number of countries that applied to BRICS got kind of increased dramatically from the Americas to Africa, from Asia to the other parts of the world. You have waves of members trying to be part of the BRICS, largely because they see this as a momentum in which you have the one hegemonic order in crisis. I think Azerbaijan is kind of going in that way, in the path of Algeria and Argentina and many others who see kind of momentum in international relations, so they could increase their, let's say, agency, so to say, in international relations system. But of course, that was part of discussions.
So as we know, the West has very bad relations with Russia. If relations between the West and China were to significantly deteriorate, do you think Azerbaijan cozying up to these two countries and this kind of non-aligned movement, do you think it could backfire on them?
So far, Azerbaijan, I would say, has benefited, even though this benefit sounds quite cynical in the light of the war in Ukraine and its humanitarian causes. From the deepening rivalry between Russia on the one hand and the Western countries on the NATO member states on the other hand. So it created more leverage for Baku, both in Moscow and on both sides of Atlantic, as well as it increased the agency, because now you have a bit more of like a middle power like Azerbaijan trying to be in between two camps, not close enough to either one, but has deep connections with the both and are trying to use one against each other. So far, this strategy, of course, worked. Of course, this strategy has its limitations. In terms of possible Chinese, Azerbaijan being kind of sandwiched between Chinese and Western confrontation, I don't think that is likely to happen in the coming period, because Azerbaijani-Chinese connections are quite, let's say, ambiguous as of today. I mean, they are not that is kind of very well-grounded, whereas you have Azerbaijan's Western ties is more of like having a deep connections, especially in light of the country's political economy. Azerbaijan's economy is built upon oil and gas sales. It's 90% of economic, political, I mean, revenues come from that sales. And for Azerbaijan, the West has always been, I'm not exaggerating, has always been in, let's say, in the most of its independence period at the biggest market that it gets its revenues. And now you look at the new deals and new countries joining to that row, you see Azerbaijan's not only role is increasing in European energy market, but also, not on the other hand, European leverage or European presence in Azerbaijan's political economic structure is increasing. As of now, 7 EU members are getting Azerbaijani gas. Just a few years ago, it was one or two member state. And now there are new ones that are planning to join that row. And more importantly, you have now new deal being negotiated between Azerbaijan and EU and also Ukraine on the other hand to see whether Azerbaijani gas could be a supplement to Russian gas for the transit network in the Ukraine. As you know, the deadline for Russian gas to be used through the Ukraine is set to expire later this year. So from that perspective, Azerbaijan is embedded in geoeconomic space of the West that makes the whole country's economic existence at the hands of this very deep and with no alternative, to be honest, in certain cases, in trade cooperation. So from that perspective, I'm not sure whether Azerbaijan would be really happy to have a massive economic confrontation taking place and trying to play between the two laissez-faire.
Finally, Armenia has announced that they will take part in the upcoming BRICS summit, as well as Azerbaijan. And I wonder, do you think it's a chance, a venue perhaps for a discussion between the two countries?
I think yes, but I think at the same time, both countries, Armenia and Azerbaijan, have their kind of well-grounded suspicions not to let once again our kind of Russia-led mediation happening between Armenia and Azerbaijan. On Azerbaijan's end, of course, government is not quite visible on making this claim that we don't want. But as you observe the actions, you see that Russian mediation is kind of seen as a big no as of today. And that is true for Armenia. Even though for the sake of maybe some interpersonal connections, maybe some sort of a meeting could take place with if Russian president is willing to organize such a meeting. But I'm not sure whether Azerbaijan and Armenia would go back to Russian mediation after both countries kind of making obviously clear that they don't want to have Russians mediating between them.
Shojat Ahmadzadeh, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Armenia's relations with Russia, its traditional ally, have been rapidly deteriorating since the Second Nagorno-Karabakh War in 2020. Since then, the country has undergone a rapid foreign policy shift in an attempt to diversify its relations, moving away from reliance on Russia and closer to the West. As such, its decision to join the BRICS summit in Kazan has raised a few eyebrows. Narek Tsoukhasyan is an adjunct lecturer at the American University of Armenia and a researcher at the Center for Culture and Civilization Studies. He joins us now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So, Narek, Armenia was invited to attend the BRICS summit in Kazan next month. They've accepted that invitation. So I wonder, what do you think is the significance of that?
I think when first hearing that, many people get surprised with that, and not surprisingly so, because Armenia has been talking about diversification of its foreign policy away from Russia and away from Russia-centered regional organizations. But giving a second thought, diversification not necessarily means only diversification between Russia and the West. By diversification, globally speaking, and diversification with any partner that is ready to come in and balance Armenia's overdependence from Russia in numerous areas. Nevertheless, this comes in contrast to Armenia's, let's say, not geopolitical, but normative value diversification, that is implementing or adopting more liberal positions or more Western-centric ideologies, let's put it that way. And that, yes, indeed comes in a bit more contrast with its intentions to seek relations with BRICS. However, this limitation, I think, is balanced back again by geopolitical realities, because as we see, South Caucasus is becoming an increasingly BRICS-dominated region, Iran becoming part of it, Russia part of it, Azerbaijan and Turkey bidding to become parts, and on three sides, Armenia at some point maybe surrounded by BRICS members. And quite frankly speaking, who knows if Georgian Dream stays in power after the October elections, maybe in a year or two, that may also become a topic in the agenda of the Georgian government. So not necessarily elevating its intentions to become part of BRICS. Armenia seeks to, in my view, seeks to at least have a presence during the discussions about it or about its neighborhood and surroundings. Because as we know, if you're not at the table in geopolitics, you are on the menu.
You mentioned there Azerbaijan and Turkey applying to join. So do you think that is a major factor in motivating Armenia to join this summit? And are they afraid of that, that possibility?
I think it's one of the significant reasons. As I said, if Turkey and Azerbaijan are more present there, then obviously the agenda will be set not in according to Armenian interests. But that's not there aren't only negative incentives or sticks. There are, I think, also some carrots or interesting pathways that Armenian government may be considering. Because, yes, we're talking, right, your question is about countries with not friendly intentions, but in BRICS, you also have India, which becomes Armenia's one of the most important partners globally. The carrots might come from India if the sticks come from the immediate neighborhood. I think this is also an opportunity to kind of touch base with Russian counterparts without going for a bilateral meeting, which Armenian government is avoiding. The consultations between the foreign ministries of two countries have been stalled for a long time. The high-level meetings aren't really taking place. And that's a principal position, avoidance of doing that as a signal of protest towards the Russian policies. And I think this is an opportunity to be there, to see those people without necessarily symbolically showing that they are going to Russia, because they are going to a BRICS summit, not necessarily to Russia, even though physically it is there.
We also saw Armenia accept an invitation, though, to this Russian-led Commonwealth of Independent States summit next year. So do you think that maybe there is an attempt here from Armenia to kind of smooth over relations with Russia a little bit?
There are signs to consider that, not necessarily smooth in a sense that to turn it into a positive and blossoming bilateral relations, but I think there's a bit more understanding of the need of having a little bit more pragmatic relations with Russia than the government has been pursuing for the last few years. Because in the last few years, it was quite frankly not even neutral, but confrontational, which I've been also arguing that Armenia is not a country that can afford having enemies everywhere. And especially now, I think, when the government of Armenia is slowly realizing that the Western turn is not going to come in overnight, that even the visa liberalization process dialogue that has been kickstarted is probably going to take years to come if in the absence of political decision, of course, to grant it immediately or very soon. I think there is an understanding that Armenia geographically doesn't go anywhere and it has to find some workable relations within its neighborhood. And the signs of this are visible also in the recent big press conference delivered by the prime minister, where he talks about possible role that Russia can play, though still with big caveats and big reservations that can be read between the lines of his speech, but also a more explicit statement where he says that basically we need to be a bit more respectful in our public discourse when it comes to Russia on the official level. And on top of this, another line of argumentation or another narrative that Armenian ruling party sincerely believing in that, or just using that as a defensive mechanism to show to the public, the same public which it had been feeding with very non-realistic, let's say, or inflated European aspirations. I'm not saying that that's a normatively a better good choice, but the discourse that the government has been directly or indirectly supporting in public discussions was increasing expectations from the West to a degree that the West itself would not undersign or would not be able to deliver. Also, when talking in this more pragmatic language about Russia, the ruling party has also has to find ways to justify the shift of this rhetoric. And one of the strategies, as I can see the early signs of it, is the following. So CIS, Commonwealth of Independent States, is based on Almaty Declaration. Almaty Declaration is also the one that stipulates that the new borders between the former Soviet republics are the ones that used to be the administrative borders between the Soviet republics. And that declaration is the one that Armenia wants to put as a foundation of Armenia-Azerbaijan peace deal. Therefore, their argument is, if that document is so important for us, therefore we cannot ignore CIS, which is also established based on that document.
So, I mean, in many ways, BRICS as an organization, it's positioned itself as a kind of opposite to what they see as the Western-led world order, that they're based on this multipolar world. This is what they're going for. Do you think there's any danger with Armenia kind of approaching this organization and others, that they could isolate themselves in the West and actually damage that process of integration into the West?
Of course, there are risks, without a doubt, because I don't think anyone in European or a little bit even more Western capitals is looking at Armenia's participation at this summit at the prime ministerial level and is switching its mood to a more positive one. Definitely not. However, I think this is where diplomacy comes in to explain interests and needs and priorities. Again, Armenia hasn't announced, in contrast to its neighbors, a bid to join BRICS. So this is a participation pretty much for the sake of it, to be, as I said, being around the table and not on the menu. But also when it comes to diplomacy, Armenia has put a very, very significant efforts throughout these 30 years to convince its Western partners of the necessity to cooperate with Iran against all odds and against all Western interests. Because just look at the map. And I think that's enough of an argument even in itself. So again, we come to the geographical and geopolitical realities whereby if you have 80% of your border surrounded by BRICS or surrounded by BRICS intentions, therefore some participation around that table, I think, can be convinced as something necessary to the Western partners. But also in addition to this, to dissent, let's say, from Western partners, Armenia can put on the table the agenda it has with the West, that its participation or its mere presence in BRICS does not undermine its Western obligations, priorities, and intentions, because the Armenia-West agenda is pretty rich now, even though I would argue that it could have been much, much richer and the West could have done much more, especially when it comes to political decisions or keeping up with the norms acclaimed by the West, that it wasn't able to or wasn't willing to back up when it came to collective human rights violations and ethnic cleansing and so on. But what I'm saying is that the cooperation that Armenia can have on other directions and cooperation that it can show the results of, for example, the Armenian-Indian deepening economic, logistic, and most importantly, military technical cooperation, are something so tangible that it's really hard to argue against it, especially when it doesn't come necessarily and directly against any specific Western interest. Participation, yes, but what comes out of it? Does Armenia join anti-Western declarations within it? I doubt it. Does Armenia join processes that would undermine US-led, dollar-led global financial order? I doubt it. So it's more of ticking the box rather than going any much deeper than that.
And we talked about how Armenia is trying to portray itself as having this diversified foreign policy now with a bit of everything. Do you think if the West were to actually step up and really speed up what Armenia is asking for in terms of, you mentioned the visa liberalization, but even EU membership, do you think Armenia, the current government at least, would choose that and kind of over any other options? Would they cut off the ties with Russia, with China, if that was on the table?
The question is very hypothetical, because I don't think that would happen. I don't think in the foreseeable, definitely short, definitely mid, and probably also long-term future, anyone in the West who has the power to decide is going to offer Armenia an affirmative option of membership bid in EU or NATO. I don't think that's on the table even remotely. And I think that realization is also coming home to the Armenian ruling party in the government in the last half a year or so. Because when the prime minister was asked a few months ago about the possibility or the necessity of holding a referendum about joining European Union, his answer was, where are we rushing? Are they waiting for us? Do we know that if we apply, our application will be processed at a speed that we are, speed, and also not speaking about the political intention. Let's not forget that it's not only about the speed, right? Also, the decision has to be taken. Coming back to your question, I think that's the main problem. Armenia, seeing the experience of many other countries countries, be it in Western Balkans or Eastern Europe, of being kept for many years in this strategic limbo that has created so many strategic, very significant problems for the countries that are in between without a very clear orientation or even a roadmap with a calendar attached to it of where it can go, what guarantees can it get. Armenia is playing its cards more in a more cautious way, I think. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, because also, of course, it's more for more, but more for more, relations, the conditionality suggested by European Union. But also, it doesn't mean if Armenia increases its Western aspiration announcing that Armenia is willing to apply or is applying for EU membership, the more from the European side is not going to come anytime soon. So this is very mirroring, I think, cautiousness between the both. And therefore, having the risk of this limbo in time in between of a decision and a follow-up, Armenia cannot risk, I think, the consequences that it may suffer and the retaliation that it may suffer from Russia. And to compare Armenia's case with many other cases in Eastern Europe, Armenia does not have only Russia as a risk to its autonomy, but primarily it has existential physical risks on its right and left. And on top of that, also the risk from Russia, which is not necessarily the case for many other countries who have only this Russia-West considerations to make.
Finally, I want to talk a bit about this BRICS summit itself. What kind of discussions do you think there will be at the summit that will be of interest to Armenia? And do you think it might provide a venue for some kind of discussions between Armenia and Azerbaijan?
I think the content of BRICS, I don't think, is of primary significance. The agenda is not of primary significance for Armenia to attend. The primary significance are the reasons that I've already mentioned. It's more to be there and to also present some of Armenian interests, making sure it's done at its presence, not at its absence. But when it comes to some of the things more concrete that Armenia can be interested in, I think most importantly, we're speaking here about a trade and logistics, because BRICS is strategically calculated also around global connectivity lines, and Armenia coming up with its crossroads of peace, with its agenda of opening regional communications, trying to balance and play both East-West and North-South cards, which I don't think is realistic, because intrinsically these two are vested with very much or even too much geopolitical interest to be compatible with each other. But anyhow, if these things are being discussed at BRICS, Armenia has things to say, I think, and it's good that it will be able to deliver its message to key stakeholders in this regard. Armenia and Azerbaijan, when it comes to your question whether this venue can be used as a venue for continued talks between the sides. I mean, the accepted modus operandi now, the functional system is bilateral. Armenia and Azerbaijan sending to each other updated drafts of the peace deal or the framework agreement, and discussing also many other issues bilaterally. I don't think they necessarily need a venue to talk about something, but why not? This can be also another opportunity to touch base. As we know now, the document is in Baku. Armenia sent its last version of updates suggesting to sign the peace agreement only with those 13 or 14 articles, the wording of which is already agreed. We learned a couple of days ago that some sentences of the non-agreed articles are agreed. So maybe it's another opportunity to advance that. But my strong conviction is that Azerbaijan is not going to sign this half-baked agreement, because the exact points that aren't agreed yet are the most important ones for Azerbaijan. And without that, there is no point for them to sign. And they were very clear in their messaging when receiving the last draft version a few days ago or a couple of weeks ago. The reaction was very illustrative that they don't have an intention to accept this offer.
Narek Tsoukhiasyan, thank you so much for joining us.
It was my pleasure.
That's it for this week's episode. If you enjoyed this podcast and want to support our work, please consider becoming an OC Media member. Membership includes a host of benefits, including newsletters, audio versions of articles, and more. Sign up at oc-media.org/membership. This week's show was presented by me, Robin Fabro. Producing and editing was by Yusuf Bartoka. There was additional reporting by Arsha Louise Barsakhian. The theme music was by Ben Wheeler.